Hi, and welcome to Online with USU. I'm Dan.
And I'm Jessica.
And today we are talking, we're starting a discussion on learning styles. We've talked about these previously when we talked about our smarter measures. And remember, the whole point with learning styles is that there are different ways of presenting and digesting information. And while it may be a bit of a myth that anyone has a preferred style that they automatically learn better at, the research shows that the more ways that you incorporate, the better you will learn. And so we're going to talk about the stereotypical learning styles, what ways you can use them, incorporate them into studying so that you can mix it up, so that you can incorporate as many as possible as you go through your studies. And so today we're going to be focusing specifically on physical or kinesthetic, logical or mathematical, and visual, which is also known as spatial. So let's talk about some of the stereotypes of, you know, when people, certain comments that people make, or what is it that sets apart a physical or kinesthetic activity?
I mean, when I think of physical, I think of a kid with Play-Doh. Like, you are physically learning because you're experiencing, you're touching it. So when you take the Smarter Measures course, it will give a much better explanation of what physical actually is, because it's so much more than just actually touching or, you know, feeling things, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, oftentimes referred to as hands-on or motion associated. So some of the things that I remember growing up when I was in school, they talked about, you know, move around the room while you're studying, you know, be physically active in some way while you're studying, because that's keeping your body, which is what you're relating to more. But some great ways that you can incorporate this into actual studying and not just mindlessly moving while trying to study is, for instance, like role play. And I think I remember my sister, when she was in high school, well, when I was in high school too, we had to memorize poems, and we had to memorize, you know, excerpts from literature or plays or stuff like that. And I remember doing Marcus Anthony's speech from Julius Caesar. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. You know, if you've ever heard that one, which is fitting since yesterday was the Ides of March. But I remember reciting that out loud in my room, and my sister bursting into the door as if she was clad in full Roman armor on a balcony addressing the mobs of people. And she was so into it. Like, everything had a physical motion to it that corresponded with what she was saying. And not just like the cheesy, like, put your hand up to your ear when you say, lend me your ears. But like, she was playing for Carnegie Hall practically in doing this. And so I always think of that when I think of role play. But I mean, we can also, you also look at like any kind of historical events. This is the reason why I remember in high school had teachers that would give projects where you like had to film, like reenact a historical event. I actually got drafted to be the Civil War expert in one of the neighborhood kids' things. He knew I liked history, and so he actually filmed me as a Civil War expert right before they did the reenactment of the Battle of Gettysburg, which, because this is Utah, took place in a snowy field.
No shortage of those. Well, this winter there has been a shortage of snowy fields, but...
Yes. But I mean, but like that's a prime example of role play or acting out what it is you're trying to study.
Yeah, I've done stuff like that too when I was younger. Always, you know, making things. Part of me sometimes feels like physical and visual often go hand in hand. And I think we'll touch on this multiple times, but all of these go hand in hand. I mean, some things, they kind of overlap, but...
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of the whole point, is to try to incorporate as many as possible.
Yeah, but something that it says in here, it said that, you know, physical things could be flashcards or models. So it's not necessarily that you are actually doing something physical, but that you are examining something physical that helps you encapsulate or envision what you're trying to understand, which to me felt something that was more visual. But I think the fact that it's something tangible, you can interact with it, I think obviously helps as well.
Chemistry does this a lot with actual like ball and stick models. Derek from Veritasium, who we've mentioned previously, he actually designed, built, and marketed and sold magnetic chemistry model sets. And I remember him talking about it and saying that he really likes his models specifically because part of chemistry, of course, is energy. And so when you split or connect, you are releasing or gaining energy. And he says you can actually feel that because of the magnets.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And so that's another prime example of physical manipulation in order to enhance your learning.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So I guess let's just jump to visual since, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand.
Good segue.
Yeah, so visual learning, things that, you know, immediately come to mind for me are you have a graph or diagram, an image. Images were such a big thing in, like, AP courses. Like, oh, look at this image. Analyze it. What does this, you know, what can we glean from this image about society? Do I hear society?
Resentment as you're going through?
I mean, yeah, sometimes it was a little annoying. It's like, can I just appreciate this piece of art as a piece of art or a picture of history? Do I have to, like, look in, do I have to read into everything? It had a purpose, obviously. Yes, it was just not always my preferred way to learn history or whatever it is we were learning. But also color coding. I have had many different systems of color coding throughout the years as a student.
Oh, yeah.
None of them quite sticks, but I think the fact that it is color just helps. That's why they always say at least write in a blue pen, avoid black.
I'd never heard that.
Yeah, they say writing in color helps remember better. I could be totally misremembering that, but
well, I mean, I've color coded as well. In fact, my favorite when I was going through my entire master's program, my study tools consisted of a box of erasable colored pencils, and that's what I highlighted and annotated all of my books with, every single one. And it's funny because I didn't actually like have a set system that every color meant a specific thing.
Yeah.
But it was great because when it, you know, for instance, when you're working with complex ideas or with a situation where it's made up of many different things, you can use the same color for all the, for everything that relates to that specific thing. So you can see the various stages or steps or elements that go to incorporate the whole.
Mm. Well, and then going back and studying, it's a lot easier to skim through and find where you need to be focusing on based on if you do choose a specific color for specific things. But I think from whatever it is I read years ago, you know, you remember better in colors. You might be like, oh, I'm pretty sure it was like a red or an orange pen that I wrote that in. You can easily go through and skim, and it's a lot faster. Yeah. Also, visual, I remember in, I think it was 9th or 10th grade geography, we had to memorize all of the countries of the world, all of like major land, not land masses.
Continents.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know where all of those are, but like, I'm thinking of land formations. That's like mountains, rivers, rocks, you know, whatever.
Gotcha.
Anyways, so, but what I would do is I would have a blank map and we would focus on a continent at a time. So it's not like we had to do like the whole thing all at once. Actually, I think we did. I don't remember though.
You studied a continent at a time. They tested you all at once. I mean, that's the way it always works, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Anyways, I would sit down and then I would write out as many countries as I knew. And then I would go back and I would fill it in with the rest, you know, the ones I didn't know. And I would do that over and over and over. And then I could, I still know where most of the countries are in the world because of this. Because it was visual. I saw it and I repeated it, which I think is a sub-learning style that falls under all of these. Repetition is key.
Paptaranya matvachenya. Repetition is the mother of learning.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I totally understood that.
I don't know. The fact that Lenin said it, I don't know that it's the best quote out there. But a lot of people use it, but not knowing that Lenin Lenin is the one that said it.
But yeah. So yeah, I mean, visually learning is great, especially when it's something that you, like, when you apply that, you know, whatever you are studying, if that's also visual, it's a lot easier to remember as well.
So if you remember where all the countries are, where's Wakanda? Right.
Took me a second. Actually, Africa, side note, was my worst. That one I struggled so hard with.
To be honest, other than the Balkans, I don't think borders have shifted more than in Africa. I said other than the Balkans.
Yeah.
I actually have I had a history class in the Balkans, and one of our books was an atlas of maps of the Balkans. And we're talking, sometimes the borders changed like every other year for 6 years straight. It can certainly be interesting. As you were talking, one of the other things I thought of is you mentioned picturing it in your mind and visualization. Mm-hmm. And you can visualize anything. I remember when I was in marching band, the 20 minutes before the show, because the show would normally take about 9 minutes to run, our director would have us, like, we'd be on the bus traveling to the show, and our director would have everybody shut up, put your head down, close your eyes, and visualize the show beat for beat, minute, second for second. and walk through it. And I wish I had his sources, because he quoted the study that they took a bunch of people, took a control group, and took a bunch of people and had them shoot free throws. And the control group continued to practice and shoot, or no, the control group didn't do anything after they did their baseline free throw shooting. The second group would go out and practice every day for 30 minutes. And the third group would visualize themselves for 30 minutes shooting free throws. And they were told to visualize shooting free throws perfectly. And they found that while it was slight, there was an improvement in the group that visualized over the group that actually practiced.
Interesting.
And the idea being that if you're practicing, like we talked about with grit, there's deliberate practice and then there's practice. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're visualizing yourself practicing perfectly, then you're training yourself to do it perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think this is hilarious because this almost goes back to the Music Man with, you know, never actually playing the instrument, but just singing the song all the time. But as I said, I wish I had his sources. I don't have a source on that. But it is true that visualization does benefit. And so, again, with role play, you can visualize anything. You can visualize yourself taking a test. You can visualize a scientific process, or a chemical reaction type of thing. Mm-hmm. You can picture it in your mind with as much detail as you want. And so it is a type of studying that is accessible anywhere.
Yeah, well, and it goes back to Stephen Covey. He talks about how he would work with his son, Sean, who was a football, I think he was a quarterback, and he would sit him down and he would have him envision making calls in, you know, those split second moments where it's really important that you make the right call. And his son did improve. And so, I mean, visualization, of course, I mean, it's very beneficial in any situation. Okay. I do it all the time when I know I have to like present or do, like, in my mind all the time, I'm just like envisioning it. And I'm like, this is how I have to do it. And it gets to the point where if I don't, like when I'm actually doing it, if I change something slight, it throws me off.
Yeah.
And it's a powerful tactic.
Well, just as I said, just like I said, visualization is very similar to role play. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like if you practice something physically, and then if something goes wrong, it throws you off. But visualization is great because it enables you to picture yourself doing it perfectly, because you won't do it perfectly every single time. Yeah. And I'll be honest, again, combining both things, combining practice with visualization, is going to get you the best results, period. Just doing the visualization by itself, yeah, it will help. Just doing the practice by itself, yeah, it will help. Do them together. And again, this incorporates the fact that very few, I mean, that there is no real preferred learning style. The more you can incorporate, the better it'll be. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I think it's good to mention, when it comes to visual, doodling, drawing graphs, drawing diagrams, illustrating things, those are all also very visual things that anybody can do.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Let's move on to logical. I think, this is understanding processes, how things work, not necessarily why things work, but also that as well. And I think, studying visually helps, with your logical, especially if you're understanding processes. Like, you need to understand the flow of things.
Yeah. The article we were looking at really dove down and said, the aspect of logical is understanding it from the ground up. Right, yeah. Not just surface. And I was actually talking to my son about this yesterday, and it was with math, because math, the reason why we teach math is because it's not about the answer, it's about the process. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about getting the process right. And I was asking him on these questions on his fraction. He was doing some fraction stuff. Everybody loves fractions so much. But I asked him to simplify, and I could tell that while he'd been taught how to simplify things, he was just told how to do it, not what it actually does.
Yeah.
So I mean, he simplified things by dividing the bottom, but by dividing the denominator by the numerator, dividing the bottom number by the top number. And I was like, okay, yeah, you can simplify that way, but let me show you exactly why, what simplification is. And we busted out the factor tree, and I said, okay, you see, these numbers are the same. That means we can reduce them to one, and then we can calculate it from here. And that, I mean, the light came on and he was like, oh, that makes total sense. And the same thing, on Pi Day, we were actually talking, my family was talking about, where does pi actually come from? You know, we know it's this number 3.14156, I think. But, you know, it's the ratio between the diameter and the circumference. And even though, like in that example, knowing where pi come from doesn't change how you incorporate it, but it's still very useful. And somebody that is focused on the details like that will remember that information better. And that's, maybe I say that because I'm kind of like that. I love getting the behind the scenes stuff, and I love understanding that deeper thing. The biggest thing to remember, though, is not to get in too deep. Mm-hmm. It's really easy with a lot of things to go down the rabbit hole on, oh, where does this come from? Oh, where does this? Hey, you know, we talk about like the internet rabbit holes, you know, you see one cute video and that leads you to another, another.
Yes.
The same thing can happen in school. I know it seems hard to believe, but it can happen. And so you don't want to end up in that. That's one thing to be aware of. And I thought it was funny that the article did talk about some of these things, you know, finding the deeper things, but then also had a big chunk of warning that was like, you know, don't get into, they called it analysis paralysis. Because it's really easy to get caught up in that, and also really easy to worry about, is all of this going to be on the test? Mm-hmm. You know, and so, yeah, go deeper, or go deep and stuff to understand the basics, but don't go so deep that you get distracted or that you get paralyzed, you know, lock up.
Yeah. I think for me, logical, which is kind of what we've already talked about, is just understanding the relationship between things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, logical could even be applied. I know we think of it more in terms of like, you know, science or math, but I think logical could also be applied to history, or, you know, more of the soft sciences, because there are relationships in there.
Absolutely.
You know, there's theories, and there's, you know, and sometimes there are mathematical like explanations for, you know, phenomena that happen in other areas that are not so, I guess, quote unquote, logical.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
economics is a prime example of this. They use math all the time, but economics is not math driven.
Yeah, but there are reasonings and explanations for those processes, for those relationships. And so, like, you know, logical study can help with in any way.
A prime example in history, since that's what I majored in. I remember one of my professors, it was a foundational level class, and he said that a lot of historians believe that there are two main decision-making processes when it comes to historical decision. When you look on historical events and look at the decisions that people made, and, you know, there's kind of two schools of thought. One is that things are driven through, like, monetary, you know, people looking for monetary gain, and the other one is more of like a morality side of things. And so I remember asking him, I said, so which are you, you know? And he said, why don't you try to guess what I am by the end of the class? But that's a prime example of taking a logical thing. It's like, okay, so there are these two different ways of looking at things. What if we look at it from this lens? What if we look at it from this lens? How does that change, you know, does one explain what happened better than the other? You know, and again, going into that analysis, and as you said, looking for the connections, because everything is connected in one way or another. And some things, that connection is very important, like with mathematics and science. You know, gravity is very much connected to flight. Before we could really, you know, before we could break gravity, quote unquote, we had to understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the same is true of the soft sciences, of the social sciences, of human decision making, and those sorts of things. Now, whether that is in fact, and going even back to the why does everything have to be analyzed, whether it has to be analyzed or not isn't important. The fact that it can be analyzed is what it was unlocks this logical side of things.
Yeah, for sure. I guess a couple last things before we wrap up. I don't remember if it was you or if it was Alexis, but, you know, someone said, you know, these two things, you can split your work but not your attention. And then that different learning styles use different parts of the brain. And that explains why you should try to incorporate multiple learning styles or techniques when you're studying. Because as we've demonstrated and hopefully persuaded you to believe, it's important because you will learn better. And I think your recall will be better too.
Absolutely. Going back to your comment about repetition, right? Repetition, yeah. Practice. One of the classes I took as a master's program was on... learning, not learning styles, but like it was like teaching and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there was actually this video that says, okay, they say that repetition is the key. And they did this exercise that focused on repetition, but it wasn't the repetition in and of itself that caused it, made it easier for people to remember things. What it is it's the connections that we make between things that help us to remember them. Just saying something over and over and over is not as useful as connecting something new with something you already know. A prime example of this, from my own life, is the idea of cognitive dissonance. And long story short, cognitive dissonance is the reason that Jason Bourne from the Bourne movies had amnesia. That's the long story short. But once I connected, okay, the idea of cognitive dissonance, the idea of finding yourself doing something that you know to be wrong or that you initially disagreed with, that was what caused his brain to break. And once I connected that, I have never, ever forgotten what cognitive dissonance is. And anytime I ran across it when I was going through my master's program, all I had to do was write Bourne in the next to the paragraph, and I knew exactly what was going on there. I knew and could relate that information. So again, it's the connections that you make that reinforce your memory. Mm-hmm. So thank you for joining us today. We will be covering the other learning styles in the next episode. Those do include oral, social, verbal, and solitary. So stay with us for that. Remember, we're on all the social media platforms. Reach out to us. Let us know how we're doing and what you think about these different styles, what you do for your own study. And we'll see you online.